Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. Before we take you over to traffic, let me tell you what's about to come up. You've seen that Baltimore census story's out, how Baltimore has changed, losing population, 30,000 people, and the greater Latino population in the city than before, more black businesses. What does all that really mean? Politically, socially, culturally? See the changes in the state? We'll talk about all that and more with our two guests. We are joined by Dr. Lindu Lubert from Morgan State University and Delegate Mary Washington. So stay with us. We'll be right back right after we go to traffic. Check on the roads to make sure you know which way to turn and not to turn. And then we'll talk about our life here in the state. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. We're going to talk about the census, which really is a really interesting census, and we'll lay some of those things out for you. Let me introduce my guest first. We're joined from Annapolis, where she is doing her duty representing her constituents, Delegate Mary Washington, Dr. Mary Washington, who represents the 43rd District. Mary, good to have you with us.
Hi, how are you, Mark?
I'm
Hello,
well.
Dr. Lubert.
Hey.
And you know our other guest, Dr. Lindu Lubert.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Political economist and research associate at the Institute for Urban Research here at Morgan State University. And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888 because there's been a lot of controversy about this. Some people are saying or poo-pooing the results. Some people are not kind of addressing what they might really mean. And they do mean a lot. And we'll talk about all of that politically. We'll talk about what it means for the demographics of the state, for how the city may be changing. Why it's losing population and gaining population and where that population is going. And there are other issues in terms of the changing nature of the state. The state was 65% white. Now it's 55% or below 55%, which is changing the demographic nature of the state, which changes the politics of the state, which says a lot to why perhaps Governor Martin O'Malley got a 14-point boost in his last election. So there's a lot of things going on here that are very complex. And so where do we begin? There's so much to talk about. As I was looking at this, I saw what the mayor said about it's the lowest number of leaving the state in the last between this census and the last census. But the reality is that Baltimore's a shifting city. It's changing dramatically. And both African-American and white populations have moved to Baltimore County and elsewhere. And a much larger Latino population has moved into the city. So tell me what you think that just says about the shifting nature of who we are. Go ahead, Mary, then we'll go to Dr. Lubert.
Oh, well, again, thanks, everybody, for listening. And, yes, this is absolutely important. The mayor was right in that for a long time, you know, we were really losing people by a tremendous amount percentage. For the last time we were able to sort of slow the decline. And I know sometimes that doesn't sound like progress, but actually it is, and it looks as though we're starting to stabilize. So for us to have a $30,000
right.
person a loss enumerated in the census is actually shows that we're starting to turn around. We also need to remember that thanks to Senate Bill 400 that was put in by Senator Pugh, there's an opportunity to get a few thousand more people counted as for the purposes of redistricting because we have a lot of our residents who are currently residing in other jurisdictions because they're part of the penal system. So those numbers will actually return. We'll know March, the Planning Department tells us that March 15th, we should know what those numbers will be that are going to be returned to Baltimore City. So, yes, it's a decline. Yes, we have to face a new political reality as that affects redistricting. But I think it's an opportunity for us to become allies with some of our adjacent counties.
I'm going to raise some of those issues you just raised and kind of wrestle with them a bit, but I'm going to get Dr. Lindu Lubert's thoughts as well here on this.
You know, we have had a decrease, but what's interesting is that not all of the areas in Baltimore City had a decrease in. So we were having some shifts within the city for increases in where the population is actually living.
What do those shifts tell you? Where are they, what were they saying to you?
Close to downtown area. You can see that around the kind of clustered around. I do GIS, Geographical Information System.
Right, right.
So a lot of mapping. So I tell
I can see you. I've got a table full of maps in front of you, which is great.
So I talk in terms of geographical geography. And so just looking in the city of Baltimore, of course, you see that there's a lot of increase in the county where people are living. But there are some spots like clustered around areas around the city or downtown area.
Around the Inner Harbor area, South Baltimore and the Inner Harbor area.
Yes, there's some growth or people are moving. So there's some loss, but there's some redistributing of where people are actually living too, which I think is an important force to pay attention to.
And we're starting to get some racial diversity. I know you noticed that as well, Doctor, that we're actually having more. We have close to 15,000 people who identify as Latino or Hispanic, and also non-Hispanic Asian. So where you would see a Latino population and Asian population in other counties, Montgomery County, Howard County, and not so much, during in 2000, between 90 and 2000 in Baltimore City, we're actually seeing a kind of population diversity that even in our own city that we haven't seen before.
Let me ask a couple of questions about this data. They said to you, so I want to, Mary Washington, I mean, you can really talk a lot to the social and political nature of this, and Linda Dubert can also comment to that and really understand the demographics of this as well and what it tells us. So, and I want our listeners to join us at 410-319-8888. But let me ask, one of the things that struck me, and this is more of a social kind of thought and analysis of one of the things that we've learned from this. When we see the shift in Baltimore, 30,000 people leaving the city or so, whatever that number exactly was. And we say with Catherine Pugh's new bill that they're now going to count people who are incarcerated, they're going to count them not from the institution they're in, if it's in Hagerstown or the Eastern Shore, but from the city they came from. My first reaction when I read that was, what does it say about the state of Maryland and our criminal justice system and the city of Baltimore? We lose 30,000 people. But half that number, almost 15,000, will be added into the census because they're in prison. 15,000 people out of a population of 600,000 are in Maryland jails. So wonderful. They'll be counted as part of the census and for politics. But that says a great deal about who we are as a people if we have 15,000 of our citizens, most of them for nonviolent crimes, locked up in our state prison system. And we have to count them because they're in jail and from here.
Absolutely. I mean, there's no excuse. I mean, clearly, you know that I understand the politics and the economics of the prison industrial complex. I mean, that, you know, you're not going to get any argument from me on that. I'm addressing the part of that. Given that, which we have to fight and continue to make sure that we are investing in diversion programs, that we're making sure that our police are making arrests that are substantive, that people who need drug and alcohol treatment, who are committing crimes against real crimes against real people in our neighborhoods, are not doing those, and that people who are repeat offenders are prosecuted and are detained and get the justice system that we have. They have to make sure that happens. But given all that reality, the fact that when these men and women come back because to our city, which is where very often they come back because to the extent to which there is a support network, it is here in Baltimore, for those numbers to be counted and used in the federal and state formulas and also the small attempt to get some additional political power so that we can address those needs. So, yes, it's sort of a... it is indeed a sad state of affairs that, you know, we're able to reduce our overall loss by a percentage point, but it's worse to not have us accept the reality that their home is Baltimore City, and it's our responsibility to make sure that we have the resources in order to support them and their families.
Let me just say that I think it's really important that we do get those numbers from the penal system back into our area, because here again, I'm dealing with the distribution of population within the city, mm-hmm. and we're looking at things like poverty level or below income, households with income below poverty level. You've got high numbers of areas with anywhere from above 15% to greater than 35% below poverty level. So if indeed we're getting formula federal monies coming in, and we have these problems with having a lot of our households below poverty level, we need to have those numbers so that we can be able to booster our economy as best we can. So it's really important that we do, and I'm really glad that we've now had that law because it have those 15,000 in an area where they don't have the kinds of poverty levels like we have in Baltimore City, you know, it's just not helpful to us.
What do the census tell us about the income of the city? Does it say anything about that to you yet?
Well, there's areas where it's higher, again, where it's higher and where it's much lower. Now, you can just imagine if we took the area of Roland Park or Mount Washington, you're looking at 0 to 5%. You go to West Baltimore or East Baltimore, you're looking at, 26 to 35% area. So it's always good. You know, we can blanketly say something about Baltimore. But, if I'm a mayor going out and, to places and I want to just not put a blanket of a description around, I want to know that, there are differences within the city. And so we've got some hot spot, and that helps us to actually allocate and funnel the monies where it's most needed, as opposed to just saying it's just, we know that we need to target here. We need to target this area as opposed to, just blanket.
And we don't have the census block group level data just yet to do that kind of very fine level. I mean, the GIS specialists like Dr. LeBaire, they're able to make those estimates, and maybe they get the data better than us legislators. But
looking at the American Communities survey,
yes.
that does give us some good, and it's at the block level right now. So,
yes.
And that's 2009 information. So it's not, census data is, as you know, there are some errors and what have you. But overall, have to look at it as overall. And so the same thing with the ACS data. So you're able then actually to be able to look at it at that level right now. And it's pretty accurate for present day what's going on. But you got to have a GIS specialist around you, Mary, okay?
Hey, I know.
I want to hear what our listeners think of what this census data says to you, how it challenges you, what you would challenge with it, what it says to you politically and socially about our community. 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888. One of the big things, of course, The Sun and other people wrote about is that Baltimore has under 9% of the households consisting of married couples with children, where that state countrywide is at 23%. And but that can mean a lot of things. That doesn't necessarily mean that everything is bad, or families are falling apart. But what does it mean to you? What does it say about this community? What does that data say to you? What's the other part of that data that they're not talking about in these articles?
Oh, well, okay. So I guess we'll let the ex-social scientists say. Well, my first pass.
You're an ex-social scientist? You're no longer
what? I still am. After five. So I don't know if you would agree, Dr. LeBaire, but in part, it may in fact just be a function of the racial composition, a little bit of the racial composition of Baltimore City, in that sort of nationally, African Americans have more, identify as having more single parent or single female headed household. So there's a little bit of that. Is it the end of civilization? I mean, I guess the truth is that, to have two people who are working together, earning money, sort of managing a household, helping each other in life to age and to succeed, is definitely has proven time and time to be sometimes a preferred way to go. But certainly it's the case that many parents who are single parents or people who choose not to partner are living very productive, socially responsible lives. So I personally would not want to try to make that another way to say that Baltimore is somehow less than the surrounding jurisdictions.
And one of the things, Dr. LeBert, was saying is that when I was trying to kind of parse through some of this stuff, it's not, I'm not a GIS person, nor, and I love looking at demographics, but I'm not an expert at it. But that's a misleading thing for the kind of the newspapers to lead with in some ways, because over half the households in Baltimore are families of some kind, whatever definition that is. That's right. A decline of maybe 5%. But
right, kind of, and we forget how we have households. It's a single parent, but you've got the grandmother that's
right
either next door
or in the house
in the
or
house.
Whatever.
And so we have community that helps raise the children to some extent that gets overlooked because it's not the traditional way of which we define how parents, children and parents are living together.
If I, as a stable human, as a stable family, would have a child but not married, but everybody's living together, that's not accounted as part of the 9%, but that is part of the reality of the world we live in.
Right.
And we're also looking at lots of single people
yes,
who live in the city and live mm-hmm. alone.
Right.
And
right.
we're not counting probably a lot of gay and lesbian couples as well.
Right. That's very true. I think, that was kind of brings to that sensationalism or
yes.
that way of, look at this horrible thing as opposed to, maybe really understanding the truth behind it. And I think that's what that was leading to.
Yeah, I think so too.
There's a very long history of people using census data to demonize certain populations
mm-hmm.
and to try to define, who we are and who we aren't. Back when in the 1800s, when they couldn't imagine a woman living on her own, she was classified as being at sea. Like, literally, that was the census category.
Right.
You had women who were in a household.
At
and they
sea,
were the
I
property
love that.
Of the man. And then if you were not in a household with an uncle or a brother, you were classified at sea. So, there's a lot of sort of social things, a lot of social classifications and stigmas that are used with census data. But the fact of the matter is, in Baltimore, we cut the decline more than half. People in very difficult economic times are living and creating and recreating family systems so that they can live a better life together. But, we have to make sure that we can do what we can to make sure that when people choose not to partner or are not able to partner, that it's not due to any of the other kinds of social circumstances or economic circumstances.
I'm going to open the phones here and reintroduce our guests. You just heard Mary Washington, Dr. Mary Washington, mayor and state delegate from the 43rd District, serving beginning her first term. Dr. Lynn Loubert, who is political economist and research associate at the Institute for Urban Research here at Morgan State University.
I'm also assistant professor in the economics department.
Good. I didn't know that. That wasn't on my list, but I'm glad to hear that. And the number here is 410-319-8888, and that's impressive. Let us go to the phones and go to your thoughts. And, Mike, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, folks.
Hey, Mike, how are you?
I'm as good as I can be, but I want to tell you, I thought I'd be bored silly with this show.
I beg your pardon.
I mean, the census, who the hell cares? I don't know how else to put it. Except I care because there's an aspect. I can't believe we got 15,000 people incarcerated in a city of 600,000 people.
Right.
2.5%. And not only that, I know damn well that it's not uniformly spread over the city. I don't even want to estimate in the poor neighborhoods what 2.5 becomes. It might be 10%. What we're showing is that this system doesn't work economically. I'm glad we got an economist here. We got to figure out what is wrong with this economy that it allows us to incarcerate over 2 in 100 people, 2.5%. That's disgraceful. We got to change this. This don't work. And if you don't look at this as a disaster, you're missing the point.
Now, Mike, I mean, the reason I raised it in the very beginning of the show is because I feel the same way, that what was glaring to me is that in order to boost the city's statistics, which we should, that we have to count 15,000 incarcerated Baltimoreans, which is really absurd. We incarcerate more people than any percentage-wise per capita than any nation on the planet Earth. Just ridiculous. And most of the people are people of color. And in the situation in the state of Maryland, most of those were black folks in the city.
And may I add that a lot of it has to do with drugs.
Yes.
It has to do with drugs.
Incarceration.
And we won't stay on this forever, but since we're doing numbers, this number, yeah, I always say, and I'll say it one more time ad nauseum, because I think it's an important statistic to think about. 0.6% of the world's population is African American. 0.6%. 8% of the world's prison population are African American men. So we'll move on to the next caller.
I just want to also just tell Mike that, again, I think I said that in my beginning of answering that he's absolutely right. And the thing that we can attempt to do, again, as legislators or as analysts or community activists, is to make sure that whatever additional monies come to Baltimore City vis-a-vis this increase gets targeted specifically for prevention, for drug treatment, and to make sure we can do all that we can to say this time in 10 years that we've cut this down 70%. You're absolutely right.
Let's reopen the phones at 410-319-8888. We're looking at the census data, what it's saying to us about ourselves, the social, political, economic implications of that data. And we are joined by a brilliant social scientist who is now a state delegate, Mary Washington, and a brilliant political economist right here at Morgan University, Lynn Lubert. And 410-319-8888 is the number here. And Terry, you're on the air. Terry, you're on the air.
Yes, good evening. I'm calling
Welcome. To
voice my opinion about it. I have been a resident of Baltimore City for over 18 years. Then I moved to Baltimore County. The problem that I see, there are many factors that play a role in the increasing population in our criminal system. First of all, you have a lot of single-family homes where the single parent is basically out trying to make a living to keep a roof over the child's head, and the children are raising themselves. They get involved in all kind of criminal activities, and basically the streets teach them the wrong things to do. Also, one factor is the programs. The programs are always being cut. Everything is expensive, and the social and economical future doesn't look bright for the middle class and the working poor. There's only going to be two social classes in the future, and that is either you're going to have money and be able to provide and put food on your table for your family, or you're going to be poor and not going to be able to do it. So, I challenge all the political officials, the mayor, the governor. You ask for the people to vote you into the office, and you say you will take care of us and do what you can do. Okay, where is the funding so our children will have a future? They're steady cutting and cutting and cutting. There are no programs to get the children involved in. And then parents need to start being parents. Raise your sons and daughters up as gentlemen and ladies as they should be. Teach them moral values. When they are wrong, raise them right and discipline them properly. There are just so many factors that play a role in our criminal system in Baltimore City, increasing population.
Terry, thank you so much for your thoughts. I deeply appreciate them.
Yes, if I could just kind of add to this, thanks for that insight. We need to change our paradigm in which and how, to some extent, and how we see the funding and how things should be done, because, we are particularly the federal government, is we have big, huge deficits. So we're spending more than we're bringing in. And what I was reading an article the other day, how churches maybe should take over schools. If we would change how we think the money should come, and how it should be funneled out, you know, if it's coming from the government, maybe we need to think, at least for a while, let another entity that's right there pick up the ball and carry us a little bit farther and help us. Because I think, you know, I really think there's a ton of churches. Of course, I did a GIS thing on where churches are located in the city of Baltimore, and you'll see that there's huge amounts really close to liquor stores, particularly in the east side and west side. But if churches could take on a little more responsibility, if there's so many of them, and we, you know, people are putting their monies in the churches, then I think that paradigm of what churches should be doing could be changed.
Yeah, so churches, community organizations, public-private partnerships in educating our young people are really important. But I'm not yet ready to see, you know, sort of give up the state's obligation to fully fund according to our agreements with Thornton. You know, if we were, in terms of Baltimore City, if the state, if we were fulfilling the promises that we made in 2007 around that, then we would be... we would be receiving a lot more money. Additionally, as you said, there is absolutely the reality that we have lost population. Our tax base is declining. That's one of the major ways that we fund our schools. So, in addition to looking at other partnerships, I think that as a state and as a city, because we have this really unique state-city partnership, mm-hmm. We really need to decide who is the ultimate authority. Who's the one that, you know, whose children are these? And we need to pay and find out ways to raise revenue. We need to find out ways to engage students in relevant education. We need to make sure that our classrooms are safe both for our teachers as well as our students. And we do lose people because they don't have the kind of confidence that people have in other jurisdictions' schools. So we lose people to Baltimore County. We lose them to Howard County. And we need to figure out ways to keep them. Certainly, we've made a lot of progress. We've increased our school enrollment. We're doing better on a lot of indicators, but we must do more. She's absolutely right.
I wonder, before we go to the next callers, and Simran and Lawton, we're going to come to your calls next. We have to take a break here, it looks like, then we'll come back. So I want to explore what we know about the census data and what it says to us about the shift racially in the city, who has moved out, who has moved in, where have people moved to? I mean, when I read that Baltimore County had a significant influx of African-American population, at least 60,000, with 40,000 whites leaving Baltimore County, what was this shift in and out? Tell us about class and race in our state. I'm very curious what might be an analysis of that. And we're going to go to Simran and Lawton, our next two callers up. Join us here at 410-319-8888 as we try to make some sense sociopolitically and humanly about what these census data that just came in is telling us. We'll be right back.
Support for
Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. We are joined here as we kind of make sense of the census data. Dr. Linda Lubert is the political economist and research associate at the Institute of Urban Research and also an associate professor of economics at Morgan State University. Dr. Mary Washington is a newly elected state delegate from the 43rd District. 410-319-8888 number here. Simran, Lawton, and Adrian, I'm going to come to your calls, but I want to ask this question to get into the issue of what these shifts tell us about who's leaving and going where and what the racial fluidity of the state is in terms of movement and what it says to you all.
First of all, let me just here again kind of qualify this movement, because in there, if you take all of Baltimore City and you can say, you know, there's always whites moving out and blacks moving in. You can go those specific areas within Baltimore City and that won't be true. Mm-hmm. So just kind of we have to qualify that, and I think that's important to note, because if there are particular areas that are growing with maybe more income, people with more income, well, there's a lot of gentrification going on. Like if you go down to Inner Harbor East area, those places. So in one sense. What you're saying is true. I think we're not having the kinds of jobs then that will attract the numbers of people that we would want. So people who are not perhaps particular in jobs, well, this is a place to do housing. Well, they can find housing, because when you look on the East Coast, and you look at Washington D.C. and other places, we probably have more affordable housing than some of the other places. So then you would get people who can afford to live here as opposed to not. But there is this changing that's going on. So I don't think we can talk about this without talking about the fact that, yes, that's true, but it's not as black and white.
No, it's not as black and white. Mm-hmm. Well, when you see the one stat that was interesting, and I guess it takes some while to analyze this, and it might take a little bit to figure it out, and 60,000 more African Americans are in Baltimore County, my guess would be most of those residents have moved to either the northeast area, or they've moved to Randallstown and Pikesville. And then when you look at 40,000 whites left Baltimore County, my guess is they've gone further north.
Exactly.
Into Harford County in Pennsylvania and northern reaches of Carroll County and Frederick County.
Exactly.
And you know, what's interesting about that, you talk a little bit about politics and party politics as well as just kind of attitudes. In some ways, in terms of the party and as well as having people that live in other jurisdictions that appreciate and understand the challenges of urban areas, you have places like Frederick, where, you know, you're having people moving up there who have lived in the city, and maybe they're not living and so they have less of a traditional rural perspective. There's some great opportunities all along the 95 corridor, and as our commercial and cultural center of our state, the economic engine of our state, to kind of spread out. So we can think of it one way, you know, that we're losing this population, but you could also think of it in the sense that we are moving people that have had at least at some point in their lives a urban and Baltimore City orientation. And when we as a delegation, or we as advocates of our city, have correspondence with those people and work with those people, there's some opportunities to build allies with these jurisdictions that I don't think would have been possible 15 or 20 years ago.
I think that's true. And I'm curious to see how this all kind of plays out. But I think these are kind of discussions about the racial dynamics of our society that the census kind of points to, though we are not kind of clear what it really means until we look at it in greater depth. 410-319-8888 is number here. Simran in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Hi. I just have two quick comments. Mm-hmm. My first is in terms of when we're talking about data and disaggregating data, particularly by race, I think we need to be really more responsible in the way that we are framing the discussion and not only think about the numbers, but think about the historical context in which these numbers, you know, have come to be what they are today. And I think in the case of one of the panelists or a speaker said that the particularly like the black marriage rate is lower nationally, while it doesn't, and maybe Baltimore is just reflective of that, while it doesn't make a good soundbite to really go into the structural and historical context in which those conditions have been created, I think it really does do everyone better to think about that. And my second point is in terms of that number, that figure again, I think that our society is becoming a little bit more progressive in our notions about marriage and about cohabiting, and it's not really something that can be fully represented on, you know, from with data, kind of the different ways in which we have families. And additionally, when we look at tax, you know, tax benefits for single, you know, once you make a dual income, you're taxed higher, or there's other kind of financial benefits that are no longer there. So I think, you know, we have to look at the economics of the situation as well. And so those are my comments, and thanks for taking my call.
Oh, Shimon, those are really good comments. I think that this is the complexity of this is something that I think she's correct about in terms of how to get under this data and look at it in a very different way.
Well, it was interesting because of what I thought. You're right on. I thought one of the comments was just this whole notion of race and how that's constructed, and who we choose to classify as white and who we choose to classify as black, and the fact that, you know, even though people choose to identify themselves as two or more races, we don't certainly use the term mulatto or mixed race, but we still, you know, sort of re-aggregate these numbers and simply talk about black, white, Asian, and American Indian, Native Hawaiian, and Pacific Islander as if these are real things. They have a real social context in that when you're walking down the street and you have dark skin, there's a reality to that experience. Whether you're going on a job interview or whatever, there's a reality to having white skin. But in terms of who we choose to put in those categories and the fact that people self-identify when they're selecting these categories makes all of it much, much more complicated. So she's absolutely, absolutely right. And I think maybe it was a couple months ago, Mark, you had a really great show on sort of investigating and looking more deeply about people who are, in fact, choosing to have different types of cohabiting or adult relationships that are mutually supporting and economically beneficial as well as socially beneficial, that we're not just simply constructing ourselves around some notion of traditional marriage. So she's absolutely right.
I think we also have to take in mind the fact that, you know, we're now a social media type nation, and well, a world for that matter. People, we're changing, you know, particularly young people are changing how they're feeling and thinking about their race and their heritage.
Right.
So, you know, we're moving to a change, and so we're in the process of it right now, that change, and so therefore the getting there, we're not quite there because we're in that process.
And it really is changing and fluid. I mean, for the first time, the census data, one of the articles I read, this shows a growth in people who self-identify as mixed race. Don't give a race in the census data, one or the other. That's one of the fastest growing percentages of populations that we have.
Right.
And that says a lot about how things are kind of shifting and changing. And then that's, I think, relevant to a debate and discussion we'll have in the air soon about just what that means and the complexities involved in that. I mean, I think that there's so many pieces of this that let me read you something and see what your response to this. The way I asked this last hour, let me ask this again. This is something that hit me about the way it is portrayed and how you write something in the news can say something about who we are. This is a quote from a Sun article on the census. White students became a minority for the first time in Howard's highly rated public schools this year. Now, what does that mean? And why are those two ideas in the same sentence? What does that say to you when you hear that line?
Well, it says that
you know?
It's just so obvious. I mean, it says that our media is stretching to hold on to certain types of tropes where it, you know, we create fear by saying there's a shrinking white population and that the color, people of color are, you know, moving in. I mean, what's kind of funny here is that, you know, in Howard County, you know, what you're having some of it, that is a function of people who are identifying as more as biracial. Some of it is a function of the really the increase in Asian and Pacific Islander Indian folks who identify as Indian into that jurisdiction. There's just so much in that. But you're right. For that writer or that to choose to kind of focus on the white population, it's kind of what folks who are historians of the census know, that that's what it's very often, that's what it tends to talk about. It from its very beginning, the two categories from the first census, 1790, was white and all others.
Right.
That was the first one.
Right.
And that continued on until, and then, you know, then it was slave, you know, white free and all others. And so it's always this notion of whiteness, which itself has really gotten very complicated, because there certainly are people who are any of the other categories who could self-identify as white. So we try to, the author seems to want to hold on to this notion of this of a shrinking white population, and perhaps that sells papers.
And you showed me an interesting piece on your maps just then about the growth of the Asian population,
yes,
in Howard and in Montgomery County.
Whites are traditionally classified, whites are a minority at Johns Hopkins University, and that's in part due to the rise in Asian population.
That's very funny.
You know, so that would be, should that be a headline in the news? Oh my God, whites are a minority at Johns Hopkins University.
Well, I think that one of the things this demographic change, this census showed, is that Maryland is emblematic of the nation, with a shifting demographic where within 30 years, the next two or three census in this country, there will be no single majority. There may be some groups that white people may have a plurality, but there will no longer be a majority of anybody in this nation. And that's what I think this trend is showing us.
And the thing with the article, we have to kind of think about, for these this journalist to be saying that this was a really good school, and if it's changing, if it's losing, we know it's like there's this underline that's being also said, oh, now we've got to be concerned about, oh, what's going to happen to the acclaimed schools, the academic achievement. There's all, you know, it's saying, it's talking to us, you know, through kind of some keywords.
Yeah. It's all coded.
It's all coded. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to digress so much. I had to bring that up, though.
Yeah. No. It's right. It's again. This is where we get to the political, not just in terms of redistricting, but the political and social use of statistics and numbers. You know, to try to frighten certain portions of the population. Now, what people like Dr. Lubert and I like to do is kind of roll that back and use it to empower, you know, the population, to use it to ask for additional resources, but also to talk about the strengths. You mentioned earlier in the show about the growth of African-American-owned businesses.
16% more, right.
Absolutely. Like, there are some really great numbers that, again, I know people say what you want to say about AP tests, but, you know, increasingly more and more African-Americans are successfully passing AP tests and going and moving on into colleges and universities and moving forward on that. There's some really good numbers, and if people become more comfortable with using those numbers in their everyday life and just thinking of another way to argue for our rights as well as our responsibilities, then we can sort of counter some of the more headline Fox News sort of headlines.
It is pretty stunning. I mean, over a 5-year period in Baltimore and five surrounding counties, the number of black-owned firms jumped 61% to 39,086 businesses. Now, I don't know how that breaks down, what those businesses mean, what they are, but whatever that means, that's a pretty astounding jump.
And what's great about that is I'm a member of the Black Legislative Caucus. There are two recognized caucuses In the General Assembly, one is the Women's Caucus, of course, I'm a member of that, and the African-American Caucus. And certainly when it comes time to redistricting, and also when it comes time for WBE and MBE, that rise and those numbers will be used to really argue for and legislate and hold contractors and accountable for making sure that the people who are doing business with the state represent this increase. So, again, we can use these numbers as we become more comfortable with them to really, really say good news about the state, but also to hold it accountable for the ways in which we're lagging behind.
Also, if I could just add that when we see increases like that, it also says there's hope. The people are holding on to some hope as to what they can do and what they can be, mm-hmm. as opposed to, you know, what this newspapers might say. There's people who are wanting to have a difference, and so they're going out there and being those entrepreneurs.
That, again, some people are calling in. Let me get them in the last few minutes here. The conversation will move on to some other topics as well. 410-319-8888 as we try to make social and political sense of these demographics of the census has told us what they're saying to us. You just heard Dr. Lynn Lubert here from Morgan State University. Mary Washington's with us, newly elected state delegate from the 43rd District. 410-319-8888. And Lawton and Terry Hall, you're on the air.
That's Perry Hall.
Terry Hall, and, sorry. Yes, Perry Hall, got you. Yes, I know Perry Hall. Welcome.
I want to get back to the prison population,
okay.
and dealing with the census. I'm a little perplexed about this, and I know I'm a little slow, and maybe I'm just not getting it.
I somehow doubt that, but go ahead.
But if we're not considering them as Baltimoreans, what do we consider them as? And especially in light of that upon release, they're going to be returning to Baltimore City and pulling from the resources. And I thought part of the census was about not only counting numbers, but getting aid from the federal government, you know, for people in need. So these guys are going to be coming back here. So why shouldn't
But they are. What Delegate Washington was saying was that the bill that Catherine Pugh put in, State Senator Catherine Pugh, changes how we count people. So that it's just two examples. So that an inmate, even if you are in Hagerstown but you are from Baltimore, you will be counted in the Baltimore census, not in the Hagerstown census, which used to be. And that's what they use this in reverse. They use that in places like Somerset County, which has the third largest African American population, but they used the non-voting, mostly African American inmates in the prison in that county into a district, so they knew when they lifted the districts that black folks could not get elected countywide or in a district.
Right.
So they shifted it back so that inmates will be counted as numbers from the districts where they were living when they were arrested.
And there's precedent for that. Our overseas military,
yes,
and workforce, they are also counted as part of their sending addresses. So there's precedent.
Now, I have to ask this, Mary, but this will probably also mean that Baltimore City may lose, since we can no longer have joint city-county districts, which I thought was a real mistake.
Let me say that's absolutely not true, and that's still
to be litigated.
There are people saying that the case was in the last redistricting that the court found that we went too far. We still have...
Huh.
jurisdictions, even in this present redistricting, that are across, you know, Prince George's County shares some, Anne Arundel County shares some. So
right.
It's not the case that you can't do it. The case is that you have to do it in a way that is not violating the law.
So what does that pretend for the redistricting map in the census and the possibility that Baltimore City and Baltimore County may share districts?
That would be the only way that Baltimore City could maintain all six, based on the numbers. So, you know, if there was a plan that were put together where some of the borders bled out a little over the line, you know, maybe one or two go over cross jurisdiction lines versus, I think, in the version that was originally submitted as part of the 2002 redistricting process, we had many, many, many more across the state. Going over, and we had Montgomery County, just everywhere it was going across jurisdictions. So I think it's about being judicious in that. I think it's about looking for opportunities to increase African-American representation. It's an opportunity to increase the number of women who are elected, and also an opportunity to, increase the number of people who's, who are able to elect the elected official of their choice. So that might mean creating some small single-member districts in different places, but it's definitely not the case, and I just want to clarify that. It is not the case that, at least from my reading and many other people's reading, that the court said you cannot cross jurisdictions.
Because that would make
not
it,
the case.
I always thought that was a very smart move to kind of blend Baltimore City and counties. It created a more metropolitan sense of who we are, and I think it allowed for more unity and representation across these lines that we put on a map, so I that are also political jurisdictions, though, obviously. But that's very interesting. We'll see how that plays out. I'm curious, before we close up here, very quickly, Dr. Lubert, what are you waiting to study to find out from these statistics? What can we talk to you about in 6 months, 2 years you can tell us you don't know now?
Oh, more detail at the block level, because then I can create my own boundaries of what I'm studying, particularly school district, attendance schools boundaries, because I do a lot of stuff with education. So just to be able to have that, but actually in 6 months I won't have all the detail
Right.
But I'll be looking forward to it.
I'll be looking forward to seeing that too. Well, it's been a pleasure to meet you, Dr. Linda Lubert. Thank you for being gracing our studios. I hope you come back again.
Okay.
It's great to have you here. Linda Lubert, of course, political economist, research associate at the Institute for Urban Research, and associate professor of economics here at Morgan State University. And Dr. Mary Washington, newly elected Maryland State delegate representing the 43rd District, who's been a guest on the show many times. And thank you, Mary Washington, as well, for being with us.
Thank you, Mark. It's a great topic.
Yeah, it was great. It was good to have you. You made this a very interesting discussion, which could have been a really boring demographic discussion, but it was not. It was a very interesting discussion about the census. Thank you both for being here.
Okay. Bye-bye.
The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the University of Maryland's Inflammatory Bowel Disease Program, a multidisciplinary care service dedicated to relieving symptoms and improving the quality of life of IBD patients. For more information, 1-800-492-5538 or at steinershow.org. You can click on the University of Maryland Medical Systems banner. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Christina Arist and Justin Levy. We're engineered by Brian Boone. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear new additional interviews that we have not put on the radio yet, please go up on the web at steinershow.org. And for public radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by MECU, Baltimore's credit union, and the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development.